This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. Dave Geddes joins us to tell us about the science of learning and how he uses it to ensure success at Mastery Games, where he teaches CSS layout, service workers, and more. We talk about the importance of sleep for learning, the joy of graduating from employee to entrepreneur, and how exterminating a few critters can help you master CSS Grid once and for all. Before we jump in, a quick word about our sponsor, Infinite Red. It's good to have a friend who knows a lot about the technology you're using, especially when that friend understands how hard it can be to learn something for the first time. If you're building a React or React Native app, Infinite Red is that friend. They want to help you finish and fix that app that will change your life. They've compassionately taught tens of thousands of developers through open source and their annual React Native conference, Chain React. Get the help you need and two free tickets to Chain React 2021 when you start a new project. Referrals count too. Visit reactpodcast.infinite.red and with their help, build a beautiful, functional app today. Dave Geddes, welcome to React Podcast.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. It's good to have you on. We met, I think, last year at React Rally when the world was still having conferences.
Back when it's normal.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have another one and maybe we can see each other again there. But I wanted to get you on the show because you're doing such cool stuff in training and education. I just wanted to like see what you're up to, how you think about training, and kind of how it culminated into Mastery Games. But before we get into that, just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're doing these days.
All right. So my name's Dave. I just love to code. I've been a developer for about 15 years now, mostly focusing on the front end. And a few years ago, I just was really tired of my job. I was making good money, the best paychecks I've ever had, but I was just miserable. One day I was working on another HTML form, which is my least favorite thing to build ever. Yeah. Forms, you know?
Oh man, they're so soul crushing.
They are, right? It's like, oh.
But like the web is just forms, right? It's just, you know, people
it
putting
doesn't
their
have
information.
To be. It shouldn't be. Gosh dang it. Yeah, I was working on another one of those in Angular at the time. And I was trying to get things to align with Flexbox, right? And I found myself visiting the CSS Tricks website, the complete guide to Flexbox. Like I was basically just living on that page, copying stuff over. And then I had this like moment where I realized like, what the heck? I've used Flexbox like on 6 different projects. How come I don't know this crap yet? Yeah. And so I got frustrated with my own feeling of being a noob with Flexbox. Mm. And so I started reading the spec and like diving into it. You know how like developers sometimes we squirrel out on a topic and just go way too hard on the paint.
Yeah.
I did that with Flexbox and I started coming up with like these mental models, these metaphors for myself, like a little dude with a crossbow shooting zombies. And that's how I remembered like flex direction, you know, coming from the top or the right or the left. And I started sharing my models with people at work. And it was making Flexbox click for them. And one of my friends encouraged me. He's like, dude, you should publish this. This is actually kind of cool. And I was like, huh, okay. So I put together an email sequence, you know, where every few days you'd get a new email showing these. It was really crappy. It was my first version of Flexbox Zombies. It was just these static images with some code pen challenges teaching the Flexbox stuff. So the combination of that and then just being miserable at my job, it just didn't take much. One morning I woke up with like 300 new subs to the email list and I was like, I've made it. Yeah. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was enough to that morning to put in my 2 weeks notice at work. I was like, I'm out of here.
It was just
I'm
the push you needed. Thing. Like I am a it god.
Exactly. Little did I realize that 300 free users isn't enough to support any kind of business. But I figured it out. Eventually, so I I quit. I built Flexbox Zombies, you know, an actual video game to teach Flexbox instead of these little static images. I've got, you know, a Canvas app where I'm overlaying Flexbox, and you can't see it, but I use the divs to position the zombies, and then the zombies are rendered in Canvas. Anyway, I took 6 months and made it like the coolest thing I thought in the world and released it, and thousands of people have signed up for it since. And that's kind of how I got my start in this education gaming idea.
I love it. I love it. I love also like kind of the arc of you were already exporting your knowledge about this thing. Like you said, you went like totally hard in the paint on Flexbox, and then we're making this curriculum, you know, not so much right away to have a product or have some type of like email automation or anything like that, but just to like understand it better for yourself, and then kind of exporting that in a small way to your coworkers, and then taking that kind of that next step of like email list and like full blown site.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. I oftentimes I feel like a lot of people kind of over focus or like over index on the end, right? Instead of thinking about just, I want to understand this thing better, and I want to be able to like teach it with some level of like expertise to the people around me, and getting that experience totally. First.
Yeah, had I like made my first goalpost shipping a complete game with 12 chapters and hundreds of challenges, like, dude, I would have given up so fast. I'm too lazy for that, right? You gotta set goalposts and ship just, you know, ship an outline if you want, you know, just ship little small increments and go over it. I like to think of like going over it as multiple passes of a compiler. You know, your first pass might just be a crappy outline. Your second pass might have some code examples. And I do this for my blogs too. You just keep going over it and over it and adding more and more substance and more polish until you've got something great. But you don't have to wait to the very end to ship. You can ship, you know, along the whole time as you go.
Yeah, I love that. Optimizing for laziness is a really good way to think about it.
I've had to, because, yeah. I mean, my wife would let you know I'm selectively lazy. Like, I'm lazy at pretty much everything until I put my mind to it, and then I go all out on a thing, you know?
Well, it reminds me, just this week, I had tweeted something about writing, and, like, something that is valuable, I think, like, as I've kind of like progressed in life and like more things are pulling at my attention, the idea that like trying to make something that you could ship at any stage, right? And I love that, like, that outline idea, right? You just like put all your thoughts and bullet points, and like if you were really forced to share that, like, that's good enough, right? You know, people can like sort it, but then you kind of like give some structure to it. You make it a little bit more entertaining. Like, these are kind of like discrete steps that you would take like afterwards to grow it and, you know, turn it into a product.
Totally. And I think one thing that keeps people from shipping is like they have this grandiose vision of what the end goal is going to be, or the end product is going to be like, right? But nobody else knows that that's what you're thinking of. You know, so when you ship V1 out of V20, a lot of people are going to get value out of it.
Yeah.
And they're not going to, you're the only person that's comparing this first version to what you think it could be eventually. Nobody else is thinking about that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just got to ship.
There's this, this book I read by John Acuff. It's called Finish. And he talks about this. He says that one of the, I think the last steps of your subconscious and in attempting to sabotage you is like a noble goal. So you think like, oh, like I should you know, kind of share my little like 10-step checklist for this thing. And you're like, and it's like, you're like, yeah, you should, but like, you know, maybe it should be like a blog, or like, you know, maybe it should be like a series. And like, you keep kind of like upping the ante a little bit until you're so scared to do anything, you're like, forget it. I'm just gonna keep writing forms in Angular.
Exactly. That's how it works. I'm gonna have to check out that book. I like that. I've got so many domains I've registered and ideas that I've started and just haven't finished.
Oh man.
So, who was the author on that book?
John Acuff.
Cool. Yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
And it's called Finish. Yeah. It's real good. Now, so since then, you've actually made a number of products that focus on different technologies. Tell us about some of the other games that you have you've developed.
Yeah, so I started with Flexbox Zombies. I took 6 months. I quit my job, And by the end of it, I was super proud. And I was talking to my wife one night and I was like, I think I'm going to make this game free. And she's like, what? She's like, you just worked half a year on something and you're just going to give it away? Yeah, it took some convincing. I was like, babe, trust me. Like, this will get people excited. This will, you know, people love free stuff. So I did. I made it free. And eventually I did get a sponsorship from Mozilla to help offset the costs of developing that thing eventually, you know. When they launched their new Flexbox Inspector, which is awesome, they reached out and we partnered up and did a little thing. So at the end of every Flexbox Zombies chapter, I have these challenges where you go into the Flexbox dev tools and try to solve it using their Flexbox Inspector.
Oh, awesome.
Anyway, yeah, so I gave that away. And then my next big question was, all right, is what I'm building, is it, I mean, everyone loves free stuff, but are people actually willing to pay for a game like this to learn something else?
Yep.
So around that time, I really got interested in CSS Grid. It was finally starting to work in all the new browsers. And I started playing with it and I was just blown away by CSS Grid.
Yeah.
Like it's so powerful. And it's, in my opinion, it's so much better than Flexbox for the majority of layouts that, like, these days I reach for Grid probably 90% of the time. I only use Flexbox in a few cases. So don't tell all the people who are signing up for Flexbox Zombies.
No, it's true. I feel like it's so good. Like, it's almost unfathomably good for the web. Right, like yes. You hear about like CSS Grid, it's like, you know, the new, you know, the next thing, you know, after, you know, Flexbox for layouts. And given kind of how the web has been, it's easy to assume that it couldn't be that good.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's amazing.
It really is. They nailed it. I mean, not only did they make something that's so perfect for like all the adaptive sizes, screen sizes that we have to design for, but they integrated with all the old goodies in CSS.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wrote a blog post about all the possible CSS units that you can use to set up your grid. You know, M, RAM, obviously pixels, but then the new FR unit, percentages. And a lot of these things, with the exception of FR, have been around forever. But the way they integrated those with grid, you can really make some custom fluid layouts in like very little time and work. It's awesome. So I got pumped about CSS Grid. And so I told my wife I was going to do an experiment where I was going to build another game. 6 months max, I told her. It ended up taking 9. Because I didn't know Grid yet. I had to learn it, you know. I had to become a master of it myself in order to build something that could help others become a master of it. So I built that and then I launched it. My email list at that point was, I think, 12,000. People had signed up for my email list.
Okay.
So I launched it to those people and I went on vacation and I was sitting by the pool, my feet dangling in the water, and my phone starts blowing up. And I thought it was, I had no idea what it was, but I checked my email and it's like dozens of sales for this Grid Critters game that I had built. And I was just, that's when I felt like I had made it.
Like, oh yeah. You know, yeah.
Like I just felt, oh man, I tell you, like, I think at the time I was charging, these were pre-orders, and I charged, I think, $145 a pop. And every single sale that came in, that money that I made, it felt so much more rewarding than like a $6,000 paycheck from a job.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a game-changing thing for me. It changed me, like seeing people pay for something that I had just pulled out of thin air, that I had envisioned and spent all this time building, and there was nobody else, like, man, it was the best feeling in the world. And that's what keeps me going, just building. I want to do that my whole life. I want to master something and then convert it into a game that helps others master it. Like the pursuit and the sharing of mastery is really like what I felt like I was made for, you know?
Yeah.
It took 15 years of coding to, you know, find my purpose. But now that I feel like I've found it, it's all I want to do. And I feel so blessed and so lucky to be able to do this.
what would you say some of the most important, I guess maybe milestones along the way? You mentioned the 15 years kind of before going independent and kind of working on your own vision, which I love hearing that part of it. What are some of the big milestones that you couldn't have maybe gotten unless you went through that 15 years of traditional kind of career path job stuff?
Well, I think in order to find like your thing, and everybody's got a thing, at least one thing that would really make them happy, I think you got to try it. You have to have a lot of different experiences. So my first job was working at a, I guess my first job really was doing freelance work, building these websites for college students that were trying to make their own businesses, you know, the business majors coming to me and asking me to put together sites. So I did that for a while. It was all right. Then I worked at Lockheed Martin doing, for the Department of Defense, doing like very technical work with a ton of documentation. And I realized from that experience that I hated doing documentation. You know, this wasn't like docs for developers. I wouldn't mind doing that. This was like documentation for bureaucrats that they're never going to understand any of the software anyway. So it was just all this like pointless busy work. Yeah. Then I had three other jobs from there, and I got a lot of different experiences. I mean, I quickly found that I was in love with the front end.
Yeah.
You know, I did some back end stuff. I have a life goal to never write Java ever again. Just, I'm no good at it. It's just, it's not how my brain works. At Domo, we built a platform using Scala, which was a lot better. And I did most of the front end and the CLI work. But yeah, just getting a lot of experience behind your belt so you can just kind of see which things you like and which things you don't. And having done that, like, you'll have experiences along the way and even from your childhood that you don't realize are like part of your journey until after the fact. Like when I was a kid, I grew a pumpkin patch in my garden, and I weeded that thing. I watered it. I took good care of it. And my dad was really confused. Like, why is he weeding the garden without me threatening his life?
Right.
But then he realized, when he saw me taking the wheelbarrow full of pumpkins out to the neighbor's house, you know, and selling my pumpkins, that's when he realized why I was doing it. And at the time I was like six, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't think this is going to be part of my entrepreneur journey at all. And it took me a long time later to discover that, like, that's something that I really enjoy, is being my own boss, selling my own products. So yeah, you just have all these experiences, but you got to try things. You never know if you're going to like something until you try it. I mean, just like the drug dealers say, right? You got to try it before you know. Don't do drugs, kids.
Well, it's like this braid that you're growing, right? You got to try it to see if you like it or not.
Yeah, I am. So I only got about an inch, but it's the start of something beautiful. My wife hates it, but how does she know she's not going to just love it?
She'll come to love it too.
Yeah. It's going to be the favorite feature that I've got eventually. But yeah, you got to try things and then determine for yourself if you like them or hate them. If you're too quick to just say, oh, I don't like that, before you even try something, then you are just, you're closing off paths for yourself.
Yeah.
Way too soon. You know, there's a lot of people who I think want to do something entrepreneur related, but they psych themselves out saying, oh, I don't want to have to pay for my own insurance, or, oh, it sounds too stressful to not have a steady paycheck. And so they close off that door too soon, when who knows, like, they could have gone on to make something amazing.
Yeah.
They could have made the world more rich by their, you know, by them taking that risk, but they close it off too soon.
Yeah. Well, I love what you've talked about so far, is just kind of doing the work, kind of, you know, drawing a lot of dots on the page, trying to figure out what you might like, what you might not like, kind of letting, you know, the people around you as you share kind of inform, or I guess tell you the things that you seem to be exceptional at.
Yeah.
And then just kind of like testing the waters with like a newsletter or kind of a free product and whatever, and then trying to build it up from there. I want to kind of transition into like why games. And I think, you know, from some of your talks, I picked up this quote that I really love from your dad, apparently. It said to try to get paid for as an adult what you got in trouble for as a kid. So I'd love to know
exactly
how that transitions you into building games for developers.
Well, when my dad was given that advice, you know, he was a college professor, and he gave talks to the whole student body. And that was one of his advice pieces of advice that he gave to how many students? I don't know, 10,000 students. And I was there listening to my old man talk, you know? And when he said that, I remembered that, like, hey, you got mad at me as a kid for playing so many video games. So maybe it backfired a little bit on him. But in his case, the context for him was he grew up on an almond farm in California. Their family grew almonds. And he was always just playing in the mud. He just loved being outside, loved rolling around, building little mud forts, you know. And his sweet mom, my grandma Geddes, was always getting after him for that. And anyway, what he eventually went into was pottery and ceramics. Ooh. So he builds these amazing sculptures out of clay, you know. So he likes to say he's getting paid to play in the mud now when he used to get in trouble for it. So yeah, I've always loved games. Like, I grew up, I probably wasted half my childhood on StarCraft 2. You know, I would...
Easy to do. It's easy to do.
I would sneak into my mom's office on campus because she had a good computer. And I would just play for hours. And when the janitor would walk by, I'd be real quiet, you know? Like, I didn't want to get busted for using the campus computers to play my games. But I've always loved games. And I don't know. Part of me thinks what I'm doing now, Mastery Games, is just an excuse to make games. that's probably part of it. But like, I actually think the medium of gaming is one of the most underused mediums and one of the most powerful. Like, if you think about games, they're so rich and they're so immersive, mm-hmm. you can get lost in them. And the game, you know, most games don't teach you anything. Most games are, you know, they might have like a crafting system that they reveal to you, you know, over a long time. And it's just super engaging. It's super fun to like learn a new piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But my thought once I built, as I was building Flexbox Zombies, I wanted to kind of capture that feeling of just immersive. You know, you're in it. You're not just like studying a wall of text to learn Flexbox. Like,
yeah,
I want it to feel like you're actually playing a video game. And by the time you're done with it and you've beat the bad guy, the boss whose name is Dave, coincidence. you know, you've accidentally mastered Flexbox, just like in a game, just like in a game like Minecraft. You know, once you've built your entire base, you've kind of accidentally mastered the craft of their crafting system.
Yep.
You know, I wanted to make it fun because, you know, in coding in anything really, there are three types of motivation. You have extraneous, extrinsic, and intrinsic. So extraneous is where you don't care about the thing. You don't really care how it's done. You don't really like it. You're only doing it for the money or the reward that someone else has given you to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people start coding because of that motivation. And that's fine, right? They heard that coding pays a lot. You know, they get into it. They start learning. Some people get frustrated and drop out. Other people stick with it. And eventually you can get to extrinsic motivation, which is you still don't really like doing the thing, but you like having it done. You care about the thing having been done right. Like, for example, your yard, mowing your lawn. You know, you don't really like mowing your lawn, but you like the feeling of a nice cut grass.
Yeah.
So that's, you can move to extrinsic motivation. You know, you like having a job well done, getting paid for it, having the boss happy. And eventually you can get to intrinsic motivation where the thing is its own reward. Hmm. And you do it because you like doing it. And eventually this is what happens for people who get really good at code or even decent at code is it becomes just so enjoyable. You know, that coding itself is the reward. And anytime you get 4 hours in between meetings where you can just code, that's just, you just love it having that, that time.
Yeah.
So there's kind of this natural progression of motivation, right? When you're learning to code. And I wanted my games to jump people straight to the third level, to intrinsic motivation, where you're doing this course not because, you know, eventually you see yourself getting paid, you know, down the road because you know the skill. I wanted my games to be something that people enjoy, even if there was no learning at all.
Hmm.
You know, it's just on its own, it's a fun experience to play. So that's why I've kind of doubled down on gaming. Like, I think there's so much power in gaming. as a medium for education, because you bypass those first two steps of motivation. You know, people, if I think I heard the completion rate for most online courses is really bad. It's like 20-25%.
Yeah, falls off real fast.
It does. It falls off. People get, you know, through a quarter of the course and then they give up. And I've done that, right? I bought a business course that I hadn't even started yet. And I bought a design course from Lara something, and I've done like the first chapter and I've dropped off. You know, so I'm no different. We just do that. We get distracted. And anyway, I didn't want my courses to have that problem, because I spent so much time and effort making them awesome all the way up to the end, you know, and my completion rates are awesome. And I think it's because I've channeled that medium of gaming to make it just a fun experience from the beginning to the end. You want to see what's going to happen. Like, who is this? What are these grid devils that, you know, have infested the planet? Like, who is this bad guy Griffin that's coming to get you? Like, you want to see how the story is going to end. And so you keep going. And by continuing in the course, you keep learning more and more things until the end. Like in the case of Grid Critters, you are so comfortable with CSS Grid that you never have to look it up again.
Yeah.
You know, you can just build a layout without thinking about it. You don't have to spend half your time on Google and copying code snippets. Like, that, all that knowledge is just ingrained in you. It's part of you. And that's my whole thing with mastery games, is, you know, the game element and then the mastery element. I want the combination of both. And I think it's really working. I think I've discovered something pretty cool. I'm excited to make more of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I find it interesting kind of the way that you've tied these concepts together. So, like, extrinsic motivation, kind of the natural byproduct of that is, like, maybe you buy a course that you don't use, or you always have to have, you know, the CSS tricks article for, you know, Grid or Flexbox up while you're working. But
yeah,
when you kind of convert into, like, intrinsic motivation, you're able to kind of internalize these things, maybe unintentionally, and then just having that skill available to you, like, on recall, you know, when yeah. you need it.
Yeah. And that only happens when you've done it like 100 times.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know, reading the docs and copying and pasting something isn't going to change you at all.
Yeah.
Like, the goal, I'm writing a blog post right now called The Power of Mastery. And I had this, like, realization just last night, because I'm learning TypeScript right now.
Ooh.
And I feel like a complete noob all over again. But that's a good feeling, right? I realize that every time I get stuck and frustrated, which is several times a day because I don't know what I'm doing yet in TypeScript, instead of just, like, Googling for the answer and pasting it in, use those stuck moments as an opportunity to grow. Mm. Like, the goal isn't to get unstuck. The goal is to change yourself into the person who gets you unstuck, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So when you find the answer, great. And if it works, awesome. But don't just move on yet. Like, take a minute to understand, to study, why is that solution working? What is this actually doing? And if you do that, then you're, after that moment of being stuck, you are different and you're more equipped. You've leveled up, like in a video game, and you're better equipped to handle the next time you get stuck, and you're less likely to get stuck on that same thing over and over and over.
I love that. I love it. Now, one of the things that is so compelling about your games is the art. And I'm just curious, like, are you doing that? Like, who's doing the art? Because it's hard for me to imagine that so much talent could reside in just one person. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I wish I could claim credit for all of it. When I started out, I was doing everything myself, from art to animation. Even a lot of the sound effects are like me, you know, doing like random sound effects. But it just, you know, I'm probably average on a lot of those things. I'm pretty good at animation. I'm decent at illustration, but there are people out there who are way better than me. And so,
sure.
I've teamed up with game artists and game animators. I had the budget for it with Service Workies, because Google reached out and said, "Hey, we want you to build something to teach people service workers." And I was like, "Oh, that'd be sweet. It's going to be expensive." And they're like, blank check. And I was like, oh, sweet. So I hired seven people who were just fantastic. I got this German composer guy, also named Michael, to create all the original music and sound effects.
Oh, man.
It's just, the production quality in that game, I've set a new bar for myself. Now I don't think I could go back to trying to do it all on my own. And that game still took a year. I wanted it to be more game-like, you know, even more immersive. And,
yeah,
of course, that ended up being tons more assets and sound effects and everything. But, yeah, so these days I hire pros to do a lot of those pieces so that I can focus on the code, the education. I still maintain like an art director type of role,
mm-hmm.
but I work with these various artists and they, you know, we go through several revisions and they come back with just incredible work. That's illustration is one of the things that I want to master. And I'm trying to spend a few minutes every day practicing sketching on my iPad, but I'm not at the level I want to be at yet. But I'll get there. It just takes effort, you know.
Now I know that from some of your talks, you've talked about some of the important aspects of learning. So, you know, it's not just kind of like what you bring to the table, but the learner actually brings some things that are critical to their learning. And I know that we've talked about this a little bit before, but you have kind of like a simple formula for really internalizing something, and that is kind of deliberate practice and sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me yep. about both of those and like how critical it is for the learner to bring those?
Totally. So back in my StarCraft days, I wanted to be, I don't know what I was thinking, but I wanted to be like a pro gamer, you know,
yeah.
I was a kid. I didn't realize that like that window was closing and going to be closing in my 20s, you know, so, but I wanted to be the best StarCraft player I could be. So I was watching these videos and I eventually found this guy named Day Nine. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's this like game caster guy that just made it so fun. And his whole thing was he would encourage people to, okay, for this whole next week, play games and the only unit you can have is a queen in StarCraft, you know? So he would make these weird constraints that would make you focus on just one aspect of the game. And that was really my introduction to deliberate practice. That's what it is. You know, you'd play a whole game of StarCraft only having one focus in mind. Okay, this game, I'm going to do better at keeping my drones to mineral ratio solid.
Mm.
So you play a whole game, but you focus on one thing at a time when you're practicing. And that's what deliberate practice is. So I design my games that way. You know, you play a whole chapter, and the whole chapter might be focused on justify content, you know, and there's a couple dozen levels and I'm kind of just really hammering this one thing in, and you get a lot of practice with it. You learn how it applies to all the other things you've learned up to this point. And then at the end of the level, I recommend my students to stop here and to sleep, you know, to resume the next day after they've slept. And the reason for that is the combination of deliberate practice and sleep is just so powerful. Deliberate practice, it ingrains the things into your short-term memory, but sleep is really where that short-term memory is transferred to long-term memory or procedural memory. Procedural memory is really what we're after. Procedural memory is what you use when you drive a car and you don't even have to think about it. You know, you're listening to an audiobook, you're eating a double cheeseburger, or at least you were back before the world ended. Oh man, I miss double cheeseburgers more than anything.
I know, now it's like Laura bars or
seriously,
just whatever you can buy in bulk and keep in the cabinet for a year.
Oh, I've been going crazy on those Totino's pizzas. After getting judged from my wife, now I call them veggie squares. But yeah, I had one today. It was excellent. But anyway, so deliberate practice. Really, like, it puts, think of your brain as having like two chambers. You know, on the left, you've got this short term area, and the deliberate practice kind of fills that up. And then when you go to sleep, if you get a good night's sleep with a lot of NRAM and REM, then that chamber transfers over into the long term chamber. And then it empties itself out so that you basically, you've got more space to learn stuff the next day. But if you don't get good sleep, that process doesn't happen. And there's an amazing book called Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker. And he describes this whole process, and I'm oversimplifying it, but he's got all these studies that show, you know, college students cramming for exams and then getting by on a few hours of sleep. As soon as like 4 or 5 days later, they don't remember anything.
Yeah.
Anything of what they've learned. So, you know, I've got students that go through, that blaze through, you know, all 10 chapters of Grid Critters in a couple of days. And then I've got students who pace it one chapter a day, like I recommend. And I can tell you by the end of those 10 days, I can tell you which student is going to have it down better because they've given time for that sleep process to do its magical thing and ingrain it in you.
Man, it's so fascinating because as you're talking about like deliberate practice, I think I don't have a strategy for this, but I know one of my, I guess the kind of like things that I do just by like virtue of like exploring life is, you know, when I learn something, I try to apply it to as many different things in as many different ways as possible. And like, I'm just hyper-focused on that one thing. Like when I learned about a React component, right? It's like people wanted to, you know, add some, you know, was it? People were like doing like React and Flex and React Router and like all this kind of stuff. And I was like, no, I'm just going to like I'm only going to use a component for literally everything until I figure out like where it breaks down, where it, you know, sustains itself, and like what are some of the kind of like weird things that we can do with it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you kind of have that similar approach in these games where it's like, we're gonna do justify content and we're gonna do it in all of the like the normal ways, a couple of weird ways, just so you have a full picture of exactly the parameters of this thing, and don't have to like wonder where it fits in, you know, in these weird ways.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, deliberate practice is a fancy term. But it's really not that complicated. I mean, you nailed it. It's really just focus. You know, you're being intentional on one thing at a time while you go about your work. And you could, developers can do that every single day. You don't have to like, this isn't a nights and weekends studying thing. You can do this while you're working. You know, if you've, while you work, let's say you find that you use console all the time and you never use the debugger and you've never really used the debugger and you don't know a whole lot about it. Well, you could, as you work, every time you find yourself typing console.log, you could intentionally delete that and put debugger in instead and use the debugger. Like today, I'm going to use the debugger every time I am wondering what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
So you can practice while you're working. It's not a separate thing. It's just simply focusing on improving one thing at a time as you go.
Yeah, I love that. It's like tiny transformations is such an important thing. I know that we kind of as a team, you know, at work one time, focused a lot on, a lot of us wanted to learn Vim. And the way that we did it was just like one letter at a time. And we just went through the alphabet. And we kind of like,
nice.
We're going to do A, right? And it's kind of convenient because it's one of the insert commands, right? And so you learn A and escape. And it's just like, we're not going to move forward until we've stopped doing whatever it was that we were trying to do before, you know, with A. And it's like, it's such a good way to, I guess, progress because you build that one thing into your muscle memory and then you build another thing into your muscle memory. Or, and it's... I feel like it's something that people like say, like slow and steady wins the race, right? But like it really is true. Like you just like keep
it is.
Focused and practice. Like you're gonna outlast someone who just crammed it all, used it for the thing, and then it gets flushed out of memory immediately.
Totally. And it's also the cure for feeling overwhelmed in tech. Like there's so much that you could learn. You don't have to learn all of it. You don't even have to learn a fraction of it. But just focusing on one thing at a time, as long as your transformation is happening slow and steady, then you're going to be fine. As long as you're just constantly learning, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years and I still, you know, you see me struggling with TypeScript, like you've got to keep learning, but you don't have to get overwhelmed and try to learn everything at once. Just one thing at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, We're kind of getting to the end of our time, but there was one thing that I just wanted to, I don't know, like bring up, I guess, just to like I guess, tell people what an awesome educator you are. So you make these really cool YouTube videos where you will take like a common screen that people might see and then actually build it out in CSS Grid, which is freaking awesome. But like one of my favorite things that I saw you do, and this was like a really cool technique, was I think you were building an overcast, like the hero selector screen or something.
In Overwatch.
Overcast. And what you did was you actually like you imported the video and then like scrubbed it to like a certain spot and then just built a grid like right over it, which was like freaking amazing. I'm especially with like Flexbox grid tools are just, you know, unbelievably, or sorry,
they really are.
Firefox. They're just so good. But you have a lot of cool content that you're constantly pushing out there that I think is very imaginative and interesting in a way that isn't, I guess, academic, like a lot of the other stuff that you see where it's just like this thing does this thing. And I'm guilty of making that type of content too, but just something a little bit more fun, a little bit more, it has more of that kind of like motivational, like this is tied to my other interests type of piece.
Yeah, well, that exercise, you know, I can't claim credit for that. When I was trying to get good at oil painting in college, you know, my dad is also amazing at oil painting. He's amazing at pretty much everything he does. I was asking him, how do I get good at oil painting? And he goes in the basement and he pulls out this old, I think it was an oil painting by a guy named Arlo Coles. And he sets it up and he says, paint that. I was like, oh, okay. So I get out my oil paints and I'm practicing and I'm trying to mimic what that guy had done. And that guy was a master, you know, he'd been painting for 45 years and my version of his was just so crappy. And when I was done, my dad said, cool. Then he went and got a different painting from somebody else and said, paint this one. And while I was doing that, like you start to, while trying to mimic the masters, you actually learn so much. You can see, oh, that's why he did this like stroke this way. And then it kind of looks like the wind has swept the snow a little bit, you know? So you kind of learn from these people who are already really good. And I think games have so many talented designers and UI layout people. So I love picking a layout that I think looks cool and trying to implement it myself. And I learn a lot still, and I feel like I'm pretty good at layout, but you can always learn something by doing that. It's a really good exercise.
I love that. Well, I have one question that I like to ask people kind of at the end of the episode. And, you know, as someone who is, you know, educating in the industry and always looking for new trends and whatnot, what are you bullish on? What do you think people, you know, might need to know or you think is going to be really popular in the coming years?
Well, I think we're seeing web standards get better and better. Where back in the day, there was just so many gaps that a lot of the limitations were being maybe compensated for in user land tools and frameworks.
Yeah.
But these days, the web standards, I don't know what they did or when they started, but they've really upped their game.
Absolutely.
And so I'm seeing a bigger importance than ever to master the fundamentals, to master the web standards. And that's why that's what I mainly focus on teaching. Because if you know CSS Grid and Flexbox, the combination of the two, then you can build any layout. You don't need to install some grid. You know, you don't need Bootstrap. You don't need any other like crutch, basically.
Yeah.
The web standards are getting really good. So I'm excited to teach more and more web standards, things like the new web animation API that just finally landed in Safari. And so now it's all the major browsers can use it. We have Houdini coming, which is kind of an umbrella term for a lot of really cool CSS stuff that we're going to be able to do. I'm really excited about that. But just mastering those web fundamentals, I think, is so important these days. And so that's the focus of my games. My next game is going to be on CSS animation.
Killer.
You know, just learning keyframes and transitions and easing. I think it's going to be way fun to build. I just, like you said, I launched my new Mastery Games platform. And as part of that, I've got Grid Critters on sale. It's 45% off right now. So it's $99 to help people just really master CSS Grid, which is the best thing that's ever happened to CSS. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, CSS grid and CSS variables, it's like that blows away like a whole decade of technology that we've had to learn that sat on top of standards. And it's just so freaking good.
It's so true. And there's new stuff all the time, like clip path is relatively new. I just used that the other day where, you know, back in the day, we would have to make a transparent PNG image.
Yeah.
But with clip path, you can just go in the Firefox dev tools are amazing for layout. You can just edit any clip path. You know, you can adjust. It turns it into like Illustrator or Figma where you can adjust the points on the vector. And then when you're done, you copy your code in and that's it. It's really incredible.
Awesome.
So I'm, I'm excited. I mean, I'm excited about service workers. You know, I learned the ins and outs of service workers when I was building that game for Google, and they are so powerful, and I don't see them used enough yet. You know, I don't see enough apps that work offline yet, but I think more and more are moving that direction. And man, it's just crazy what you can do with the web platform these days.
Oh yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. And like you said, like every day the platform itself gets better and incorporates more and more of the really good ideas that had to be done in user land before. And it's a really exciting thing to see that actually making its way back into the platform.
Yeah.
And I like your advice to kind of just like keep your eyes up, you know, see what maybe libraries you don't have to use anymore. And you know, keep learning. So where can people find you and your games? I know you mentioned CSS Critters is on sale right now. Where can they find that?
Yeah, so all my games are at mastery.games is the domain. Or like Grid Critters specifically is at gridcritters.com. I've got a newsletter on my site people can sign up for. I try to be funny on Twitter once in a while. But yeah, mastery.games is probably the home.
Awesome.
For all this. That's where I blog to. I used to have everything separate, but I just recently moved it all into a monorepo, which I'm going to write about because it's been fantastic. Like my blog is now sharing React components, a button, for example, an action button, the same component that's used in my games. So it's really awesome. Cool. I'll have to delve into that later.
Well, I'd actually hoped to talk about the stack a little bit, but we just there was so much to talk about. So maybe we'll have to have you on again and we can talk about a little bit of your stack.
Cool. Sounds good, man.
Cool. Hey, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. It was super fun.
Yeah, thank you. It was a blast. Have a good one, man.
This has been episode 95 of React Podcast with Chantastic and Dave Geddes. Find the people and projects mentioned in this episode at reactpodcast.com/95. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. They're ready to come alongside you and help fix and finish that app you've been dreaming of and build it with great patterns and practices for the long haul. Visit reactpodcast.infinite.red to get expert help. 2 tickets to Chain React in 2021 and a beautiful functional app today. If you like this show, there's a fast, free way to demonstrate your support. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's the best way for you to let me know what you think we're doing right and what we can improve. 2 to 3 minutes of your time helps us make the best show we possibly can. As always, links and show notes for all episodes are available at reactpodcast.com. This episode was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson at Spec, a network to help you level up in design and development. Check out spec.fm for other shows that are sure to fast-track your career. I'm your friend, Chantastic. Thanks for listening. We'll be in your ears again next week.